Have a handout, you know where we're going. Actually, you don't. Okay, this is the first of several lessons. We're going to cover pre-relationships and the family. Next week, the family, Lord permitting. And after that, the marriage, divorce, and remarriage, kind of a package deal. These are things basically that have been taught in the church for a long time. It has kind of a different emphasis nowadays. It used to be we just chalked up the deterioration of our society is a kind of gradual amorality that infiltrates people. But what's becoming more and more clear and why it's accelerated so much is that the destruction of Christianity has become an agenda in this country. I mean, if you notice, nobody says anything about Hindus or Buddhas. In fact, those religions in the Islam are actually allowed to be taught in school. People, they learn about the customs, the festivals, the mode of worship. The kids even dress up in California, in traditional garb and play it out. But you can't do that with Christianity. One of the things that the communists found out a long time ago, even as they were losing their own countries, is the best way to destroy the United States. And that is push all the various agendas that are very strong nowadays. I mean, there's a reason why humanism in the schools is progressing, the homosexual agenda, the eco-environment, the feminist movement, all those were outlined in the 50s in the communist playbooks of these are the things you need to push in order to destroy. They figured out it wasn't just America. You had to get rid of Christianity in order to get rid of America, because we were a Christian-based nation. And in order to destroy the principles and the underlining, moral fiber and everything else, you had to attack everything that Christianity stood for. In fact, it was kind of interesting that in one of those books, the communist playbooks, there's a dedication in the beginning of it that actually ascribes the book to Lucifer, because all the ideas that are being presented through the Communist Party or the agendas of that, and it wears various names now. It's the progressive movement, it's liberalism, it's whatever you want to look at. It's all under the various masks under the same thing. And it's used in Satan's techniques in order to destroy just about everything around us. So as we look at this stuff, don't look at it, first of all, as just, there's this kind of a general degeneration of the moral fabric of the country. It's designed. It's an all-out war. And we've got to be able to stand up. There's so many fronts. The best thing you can do right now is to make sure you understand what Christ expects of you. Get yourself strong, and then take the onslaught as it comes. In fact, it was an appropriate thing one of the songs we just sang. Every war you win makes you stronger for the next battle. And that's true on little levels, big levels, whatever. As long as you keep winning, you're prepared for the next, onslaught. And so that's what we have to do as Christians. We can bring this back. There are other forces. God's still at work, too. In fact, sometimes you look at what's going on, you get a little bit frustrated, a little mad. There's times I'm going, what do we do? Can we be more aggressive about this? And then I decided one time, we'll just keep it on arguing our case rather than take any physical action. Because one, you'll either get in the way of God's wrath, or two, in the way of the other nut jobs that are out there that have their own solution that are more violent. So just go along with God's playbook and win through loving your enemy and getting the truth out there. Best propaganda that can be done. Also, as we look at this, especially this pre-marriage relationships, this is primarily for the young people, which it probably won't reach anyway, because they're either not here or they got other things on their mind while they're sitting in the pew and it goes over their head, which is the reason why we have so many troubles anyway. But we can also say, you know, this is something that as parents, you know, we can begin to teach our children at a young age. It's something, even as you've entered into a marriage, you know, these are some of the things you can go through to make the marriage stronger. Okay, principles to keep going over again and again. And now that we're living so long, there's a lot of people that have lost their spouses early in life and they're dating. So, I mean, there's Christian networks not only for the young, but for, you know, older single Christians and things like that. So even the older folks got to reconsider, since you haven't been in the dating process for so long, kind of refresh your memory about what you need to be thinking about, you know, when you're looking at perhaps either just going out and having some fun or maybe looking for another partner. So looking at this stuff, we might say it's amazing how people, how many people feel the Bible is outdated. Well, I mean, the customs we're looking at are thousands of years old, and you know, this is modern times. But when you witness the results, I mean, supposedly progressive movement society gets better and better. Just let it do its thing. It's part of the evolutionary concept of letting things work their way out, and you'll come out with a better solution. Well, more of a law of entropy is involved than a law of evolution, where things have a tendency, if you don't get a hands-on and try to fix it, it goes downhill and gets worse and worse. And that's what we're seeing. Things getting morally worse, violently worse. And so we need to take a stand against it. Notice that some of the worst societal diseases have been unleashed, some of the worst wars, and while children and sexual abuse is on the increase. Further, it's also alarming that people are more eager than ever to begin relationships at a younger and younger age. And this is scary. While even the older individuals are confused about what they're trying to accomplish, you know, when they're going out with other people. Dating as a practice in the United States is a relatively new concept. 100 years ago, dating wasn't heard of. Most relationships were arranged by the parents. They still are in a lot of countries. Talking to Joshua, I was over in India, and they had an arranged marriage. Their parents got together. They knew what was best for the individuals, and they worked out, you know, this is your wife. and you know, Joshua says there's like 98% success rate in marriages. Divorce is almost unheard of in India. The Hispanic culture used to be a lady that went with a couple and made sure that nothing untoward went wrong. Usually any kind of relationship was lasted a year, because no physical contact. You had to sit there and actually talk to the person and get to know them. Startling concepts. The older generations actually knew what they were doing. Of course, they abused it sometimes, but that's not an excuse to totally disregard it. So what we'd like to do this evening is look at some of this stuff, pros and cons, about what we're trying to accomplish, in dating, and some guidelines perhaps to make it to the maximum. As to why people date, well, first of all, to socialize. We get together very innocently. Sometimes, people at work go out for lunch together, whatever. It's just something that's done. It helps to prepare young people for roles expected of them. One of the scary things that there's too many, computer geeks out there that never get out of their parents' basement. They're on the internet all the time, and they're never actually sitting down and talking with people. There's kind of emails, you can call it that, texting. I know it seems kind of weird, but actually when I stop to think about it, that's what Hebrew is. Just consonants, four of them, and that makes up the Hebrew language, just over and over again. It was only later that the Masoretes started putting vowels into it, the vowel points. So texting isn't exactly something you call, strange to the planet. But anyway, people need to interrelate. In fact, one of the things they thought, years ago, is that with the computer and people working at home and stuff like that, that people would grow apart. Well, this was during like the 70s, 80s, whatever. And what they found out is you can't overcome the fact that people are gregarious. They like to communicate. They get, that's why the social networks have taken off. They found out also that people went to the mall more because they wanted to be around people. Okay, and lo and behold, they started going back to church, just to be around people. Okay, so we need that interrelation. So one of the positive things maybe of dating that should be used for is to start honing your social skills, to interrelate with people, and talk to them, and get to know others. How complicated individuals are, and their needs and their wants and their dreams and all that stuff. Also, to get acquainted with the opposite set, working on shyness, self-consciousness, awkwardness, getting help. If you got sisters, talk to them, or brothers, or whatever out there. Developing social skills, so you don't say the wrong thing. You learn how to be nice, how to respect the customs of others. Looking how, if you go over to somebody's house, what is required of you. What is expected of you. One of the things that, we're taught as Christians, is respecting customs. Now, also, personality develop. What can I do for others, or what can they do for me? How are you looking at this? Are you looking at, how can I put myself out there to be there for someone else? This is where the church is a good model for us. Or what too many people are doing is, what can this person do for me? Self-centered. And they work that. And people are being used then as just, tools or objects instead of actually being respected as individuals with full aspects, body, mind, and spirit. It can bring out the best or the worst in us. Some people go out and have, date to have fun. And I put, this is kind of a tongue-in-cheek, define fun. Some people define fun as going out and getting so blasted you have the foggiest idea what you did. I guess the movie The Hangover, is a good example of being absolutely unaware of what you've done the night before until you go out and, try to get your car and you find out, you've stolen a police car. The valet pulls it up, or there's a tiger in the bathroom or something like that, where, if that's fun, you got to rethink things, because there's no, a lot of people just get drunk and wrap themselves around a telephone pole or kill babies crossing the street. What really is fun? Hopefully something you won't regret in the morning. Also, you're testing our roles in life and discovering the expectations of others. What are people looking for? You got to be careful of this. I know several people that have, contacted somebody on the internet. They thought they were getting along, and then 2 weeks later, they showed up at your doorstep. And in person, it was different than over the internet. Okay, first of all, you just found out the person's sort of strange. If they go 100 miles to meet somebody that they've never met in person. Don't know that much about them. And as a selection process for marriage, there's the ideal thing, but you have to know what you're looking for. This is one of the things where God can help you out. What are you looking for in a mate? We'll cover this in a moment. As kind of a reference for dating, take a clear and critical look at the dating customs as they presently exist. This is something you put into what I would have said, like 20 years ago as to the dating customs are radically different now as you look what's going on. Now they're scary. And so, you have to look at it, go, do we really want to do this? At least put some safeguards into it. Determine what purposes or functions the dating stage of life potentially, serves you. Are you getting something good out of it? Is it helping you, broaden to understand other people, whatever? Or, are you misusing it, which most people are? That's what you got to be careful of. Whatever your agenda is, somebody else has an agenda also. And it may not be on a higher, level that you're expecting. Assess the contribution of the dating experience toward your growth into maturity and towards achieving your life goals. Now, what are you trying to achieve? Have you got your life set out? Now, it doesn't always work for people, but there is like a standard thing. You get a good education, then you go get a good job, and then you think about, you know, maybe a family that you can support and take care of. You know, for the guys, maybe even the ladies too, to help out in that. Yeah, and when do you want to, you know, start a family? Perhaps after both careers have taken off and you're making good money, whatever, and then one can, you know, stay home and raise the kids properly. But too many kids are just shunting the whole process. Having babies early, I mean, that means you have to drop out of school early. I mean, the things that could have helped you, it's just going to complicate your life that much more. Now you got to do everything in reverse, okay? You get married, you have a family, you're trying to raise kids, but you're not making a good income, so you got to go back to school. So you're going to go into school and that, and maybe work in two or three jobs. You know, you've just made life worse when it could have been, you know, a lot simpler and sweeter, not as difficult. Okay, so think these things through, or you can really mess up the process. You can mess up your whole life for a long time. Myths and stumbling blocks. I like this section. The one person theory, that there's one person, what they call it, the soulmate, something that somehow almost like the creation of the universe, that things just kind of came together and worked out, that this force of nature actually produced one person that's especially right for you. Now, how do you determine that? Good luck. Okay, especially how do you look at their soul and find out it matches yours? There is one right person. This is a pleasing vanity that has nature making special dispensation just for you. How about love at first sight? I've met a lot of people that believe in love at first sight. But I've seen people that fall in love with posters too. You know, did you really know the person? Okay. People are very complicated in layers. I think, yeah, some people that say, well, love at first sight, I think you got lucky. And you don't remember all the times that you looked and you thought you were attracted to a person, and then something about it, the deeper you got, kind of turned you off, or something better came along or whatever. Okay, if it's love at first sight, you got past the first layer, and when you got past it, you know, it's like peeling an onion, you found out, oh, they got a brain too. Well, I'm kind of happy with that, you know, that I can sit down and talk with them. And then maybe you get under that and you find out your goals are the same, or you get under that and you find out you have a spiritual bond, you know, you're both interested in God or something like that. But you can't see all that at first sight. That's something you have to explore. This is why you get together with people, talk things out and find out, you know, more about them. I mean, when you sit down in a counseling lesson, a session, you know, with people, even a good psychologist will tell you, yeah, we got to do a lot of these things because we have to, you know, peel out the layers. I mean, as they're sitting there, the psychiatrist knows that the first thing that comes out of the person's mouth is not their problem. You know, they got to find out what the real root of the problem is, which means they got sessions to dig. Okay, because they know there's a facade there too. How much of a facade do we put up when we date people, you know, talk to people? Falling in love. I don't know. Why can't you, you know, why is it a nobler expression like climbing up to the pinnacle of love? Why is it something you have to step in or fall in or whatever? You know, use your head and not your heart. One of the things they taught in home and family class is, I remember the wise old teachers telling you, make sure, you know, the best person to marry is your best friend. Not same sex, you know what I'm talking about. You know, but if you've got an opposite individual that you really are good friends with, you talk things out, you share a lot of problems with, that's probably one of the best people to consider for a marriage partner. Not somebody you don't even know. Chances are you're more in love with the idea of being in love than the actual person that you're with. That's especially true for guys. We might think the women are more emotional, but men, more than anything, fall in love with the idea of being in love. First girl that comes along, that looks good with her car or something like that, they're for it, right? Emphasizing only one or two characteristics. This is where you really get in trouble. To see only what you want to see and not take the time to find out, what else. There are many red flags, and especially now. People are more socially maladjusted and dysfunctional than probably any other period of time, except maybe during Genghis Khan or something like that. You really don't know what you're getting. So a lot of times you're falling in love with that facade. You're not realizing that, to take the time to find out there's characteristics that a psychologist will take you to or a family planner as you sit there and look at each other's character to find out, that's a red flag. Too many people today are abusive or unstable or undependable. If you find out this, the guy you're dating hasn't kept a job in the last 10 years, red flag. Okay. So there's all sorts of things you can look at that should give you a good clue. But most people just ignore that. They've found the two characteristics, they got good eyes or something like that, and they don't want to see anything else. And so it comes as a surprise, that he buries bodies in the basement or something like that. Get a clue. All these CSI, Criminal Minds, whatever. Most people will tell you these serial killers, they're good neighbors, good family men, whatever. They just got this one little compartment in their brain that's very dark, and they go out, when the moon's full, and they do weird stuff, that would put Jack the Ripper to shame. Best to find out about that before you get engaged. Narrowing the field too soon. Better to date around and compare, especially if you're a teen, date in groups so you're not committed to anything. You can be so naive that, suddenly you find some individual and they actually show a little interest in you and maybe even kiss you, you feel you got to marry them. This is an individual that hasn't been out of the backyard all their life. You got to figure out what's out there, know about people, what's going on, all the different kind of characteristics, personalities, everything else. So you get a feel for what life is like instead of just going with the first thing that comes. Especially if you're looking for somebody who's going to be a good mate. Differing expectations, intelligent selection. You're looking for the help that God provided. When God created Adam, then he brought to him a mate suitable. And that's what the woman was there for. She was a perfect balance, supplement, complement for the things he was trying to accomplish as a man. And that was to serve God. You might find other goals that you're compatible with, that you want to accomplish and everything else, but the primary thing is what you look for in a soulmate, a spouse, is someone that's going to be there for you. Now, you might find other things. I know Ron and Patty here, I kept thinking about that. They probably got together because they liked to canoe or go on water stuff and whatever together, camping. But they, you grow out of that. What have you got once you get past that? Have you got a deeper relationship that you've been building? And you'll find mostly that what will keep things together is a dual commitment to God, which is what was you should have been looking for to begin with. And consideration, there's not just two people getting together. You're bringing two families together. Do you get along with the family? Does their family get along with yours? I mean, there's a lot of family gatherings, the Thanksgiving dinner, the Christmas dinner, getting together for this or that, there's a lot of things that are planned. Do they all get along? I mean, you may have a good family, don't get involved with somebody that's part of the Manson family. Big trouble. Do you share interests and purposes? That's kind of like the first one. Would you be proud of the person as a co-parent to your children? Are you proud to introduce them? Take them to work, show them to your boss, take them to your family, whatever. If you're not proud of it and you're just a little bit ashamed, rethink it. Does this person encourage me to think high, live pure, and be better? I mean, that's what they're there for, help you. And you got to think about, too, how can I help them? It's got to be a dual thing. This should be all your thoughts and attitudes and everything going into it. So is this person interested in God above all else? Infatuation? Infatuation happens suddenly, but love takes time. That's one of the ways you'll tell the difference. But you don't just fall in love. A lot of people will talk about, I wasn't really in love with them, wasn't interested in this person, but the more I got to know them, the more we worked together, more we studied together, whatever, I realized just what a special person they were. You find out, when your parent says, this person has a nice personality, that was more important than what they look like. First of all, in 1 John 4:7, the computer geek doesn't know how to turn his phone off. Okay. 1 John 4:7, God talks about love. But the love he talks about is the agape love, which we've been trying to define for the last couple of months or so. Love is seeing what another person needs and helping them accomplish it. Whether they're in trouble and you need to help them that way, or how to help them be better. Love does this. This is what God did for us. He saw our condition. He saw the sin that we were in. He saw the problems that we have, and he went to fix it. That's God's love. He says, this is what we need to do to others. Infatuation arises from a few traits, while love appraises the whole person. Infatuation is self-centered and looks at the other as a means to an end. Now we're getting a society where both people are self-centered, where physical intimacy is recreational. That's what they call it. Where they expect to have an intimate relationship, the first date. Looks on the other person as a separate entity. This is infatuation to be used for self-gratification. Is that what you're out using people? Is that your compass in life? Instead of helping people, use them and discard them. Man, you're making enemies. That'll come back to you. You may be interested in more than one person at a time. That's infatuation. When some guy tells you he's got three girls that are all the one and only, this develops into polygamy. And you can get arrested for that still. Has a false sense of security and is seeking reassurance in an affair. That is, no one's ever loved it. Finally, somebody shows a little interest in them. So they don't know how to handle it, so they make more of it than it is. Infatuation makes one suffer loss of ambition, appetite. This is where you get infatuated with someone young in school and derails your whole life. Now you can't study for your tests. You're not interested in learning anymore. You're interested in starting a life or doing something. Oh, and love will cure all. That's lame, if nothing else. Makes the physical element more important in the relationship. Infatuation is afraid to ask questions, afraid of revelation, afraid of discussion. You're afraid you're going to find out something you don't want to, so you just don't find out. Okay. Now you've got women in abusive situations because they didn't want to know. Okay. In fact, a lot of that is, I think Hollywood actors are more prone to that than anything else. Why they have so many marriages. In fact, this is the problem of the facade. Over and over again, you'll hear stories of the leading man falling in love with the leading woman. Have they really fell in love with them or the role they're playing? And when they finally get them into the real life, yeah, it wasn't what they thought it was. And this is something we, you know, can get into also. In 1 Corinthians 6, God warns us, you know, be careful of, you know, what the world is going to through. The body is not for immorality, but for the Lord. You know, the Lord is for the body. You know, God is wants what's best for you. He doesn't want you getting involved in it. These sexually transmitted diseases, yeah, I've never known of a Christian to have to worry about that. If you're not involved in it, I know when I was in the service, Monday morning, yeah, I didn't even know where the STD line was. But most of the guys are there, you know, getting shots, getting looked at, whatever, because of what they did over the weekend. Man, you're saved so much hassle. You know, so much things that can happen to you in this life. All the diseases that are out there, the bad relationships, all because, you know, you've done it right. Yeah, you respect your body as God respects your body. Also, you have a tendency to look at your bodies as the members of Christ. Okay, that it's not yours just to play with. That you have to respect the other connections and relationships that you've made with God. When you start joining yourself to others, you make them part. I mean, this is one of the things about marriage, the two become one flesh. So out of marriage, you've still got a possibility of becoming one flesh. And all the implications of that, which I'm not going to go into, but just the fact that, you know, if you want to talk about it, you know, on a more personal level, be happy to. But yeah, there's a lot of things you have to consider that the world doesn't. It has no idea what kind of problems it's getting into because it doesn't realize how complicated, you know, God has made us, fearfully and wonderfully made. And it's so easy when we do it wrong to have mental breakdowns, to have physical breakdowns, to have spiritual breakdowns. I mean, we're jinking with the whole system. And as bad as a 3-year-old wanting to stick, you know, a couple bobby pins in a light socket, it has no idea what it's doing. And most of the world doesn't either. You know, as it plays around, and you just look at some of the stuff. At my time, they started smoking bananas. Yeah, or sniffing glue. Now I can understand the glue because I used to in my closet, you know, making air. Airplane models and stuff like that, and you come out of there, you're a little high. So I can kind of understand that, but the banana thing I never could, you know, or what anybody else puts in their mouth. I mean, if you're cautious, you question the prescription the doctor gives you. You really don't take anything off the street by a stranger. But people do. Oh, yeah, no problem. So best thing here. Get into the second thing. Just best thing God can tell you, flee immorality. Okay. Don't stop it and wrestle against the temptation or whatever and try to overcome it. God says, get out of there. This is one of the strongest attractions you're going to get find yourself into. You know, this is why the pornography, other these things, all these sexual things, the way our society is geared at all, it's more habit forming than the drugs. It'll ruin your marriage. Last thing, you've been bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body. You've been bought away from this stuff. You've been rescued from sin. God has given you all the things you need to strengthen you in this life to live a good, prosperous life in service to Him. Also, it talks about in a marriage. You know, who has authority over your body? In a marriage, you give it up. Now, this is one of the things, you know, that sometimes we don't think about, but you give yourself over to the one that has authority over you. This is why spiritually we give ourselves to God, because He has authority to do that. We give yourself to Satan, he doesn't have the authority. You've given yourself over to something that you shouldn't have. Okay? Physically, the same thing occurs. Okay? When you get married is the only legitimate time that you can give up the authority of your own body. You can give it over to your spouse. And God says that's a good thing. She has authority over the husband. The husband has authority over God. The problem with the fornication, especially when it talks about giving yourself to a harlot, and that was the temple prostitute, you've now subjugated yourself to idolatry. Okay? Through the flesh, you've given yourself over again to a demon, to Satan, which is what ultimately people are doing now. They don't think of it that way, and they might even poo-poo it. But this is exactly, you know, the way they're putting it. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil. Christianity is being called evil. It's trying to get rid of it. Morals are looked at as a thing that's in the way of your freedom. I mean, they're pushing a freedom agenda, a freedom of sexual revolution and all this kind of stuff. And Christianity stands in the way of all that. This is why God and the Christian have to go. Because we know what is light and what is dark. And the world has the foggiest idea. And this is the reason when the apostles went out and started preaching the gospel, it says they turned the world upside down because they flipped it to show what is the light and what is the darkness. And this world is pushing the darkness. I mean, really pushing it. And we have to push back. I think that's it. One last thing. We've gone through this before. You know, if you want a bumper sticker, if the old morality is outdated, and that's what they tell you, oh, this is the 21st century, you know, those old morals are outdated. Well, if the old morality is outdated, why isn't the old immorality outdated? I mean, most of what they're pushing has been pushed in every civilization from the dawn of time. How come it never gets out of date? Because it doesn't. Yeah? Neither does the morality. Yeah? God has always been involved. The sun's been around since the beginning also. It hasn't gone out of date. We still use it. Okay, so. When we present this kind of stuff, we're not being old and stuffy. Okay? We're not bringing out things that, you know, should have, you know, become passé a long time ago. What we're doing is presenting God's truth. And trying to give you the best advice, old or young, as to what can best benefit your life and sustain it, not only now, but to take it into eternity in the presence of God. That's the important thing. Okay? That God is here to keep us well-rounded. The world is pushing an agenda of just the physical, maybe a little mental, but even that's suspect. They don't want you to think. I mean, look at Islam. They don't want you to think. They don't want to engage in debate. They don't want to discuss things because they know they don't win. You know, when it comes down to actually looking at subjects and taking them into the light, no one can stand up to the viewpoint of a Christian. We know what we believe. We know why we believe. We've got the reasoning behind it. We've got the facts behind it. We've got the authority of God behind it. This is why God is not afraid of anything. We shouldn't be either. We should have that kind of hope and trust in Him that He's trying to tell us the right thing because He does love us. I mean, He sacrificed His Son in order to give us this opportunity. So if there's anything we can do to help, you know, to strengthen you, to make you right with God, to do the right thing, to overcome whatever you're locked into, you know, please let us know. That's what we're here for, to help each other. Well, why don't you make your request known as we stand to sing.